10. "I'll have another piece of lemon pie," Skip said, eagerly extending his plate. "If you're still hungry, Skip," Clay remarked casually, "there are a few dinner rolls left." Skip's gaze darted to the small wicker basket and he wrinkled his nose. "No thanks. Too many seeds in those things. I got one caught in my tooth earlier and spent 5 minutes trying to suck it out." Rory did her best to smile. Skip must have noticed how miserable she was because he added, "The salad was real good, though. What kind of dressing was that?"
"Vinaigrette."
"Really? It tasted fruity." "It was raspberry flavored." Skip's eyes widened. "I've never heard of that kind of vinegar. Did you buy it here in Nightingale?"
"Not exactly. I got the ingredients while Kate and I were out the other day and mixed it up last night."
"That tasted real good."
Which was Skip's less than subtle method of telling her nothing else had. He'd barely touched the main course. Clay had made a show of asking for seconds, but Rory was all too aware that his display of enthusiasm had been an effort to salve her injured ego. Rory wasn't fooled. No one had enjoyed her special dinner. Even old Blue had turned his nose up at it when she'd offered him a taste of the leftovers. Clay and Skip did hard physical work. They didn't sit in an office all day like Dan and the other men she knew. She should have realized that Clay and his brother required a more substantial meal than noodles swimming in a creamy sauce. Rory wished she'd discussed her menu with either Mary or Kate. A tiny voice inside her suggested that Kate might have said something to warn her.
"Anyone else for more pie?" Kate was asking.
Clay nodded and cast a guilty glance in Rory's direction. "I could go for a second piece myself."
The pie was delicious, Rory told Kate, meaning it. She was willing to admit Kate's dessert had been the highlight of the meal.
"Kate's one of the best cooks in the entire county," Skip announced, licking the back of his fork. "Her lemon pie won a blue ribbon at the county fair last year." He leaned forward, planting his elbows on the table. "She's got a barbecue sauce so tangy and good that when she cooks up spare ribs, I just can't stop eating them."
His face fell, as though he was thinking about those ribs now and would have gladly traded all of Rory's fancy city food for a plateful.
"I'd like the fettuccine recipe if you'd give it to me," Kate told Rory, obviously attempting to change the subject and spare Rory's feelings. Perhaps she felt a little guilty, too, for not giving her any helpful suggestions. Skip stared at Kate as if she'd volunteered to muck out the stalls.
"I'll write it down before I leave."
"Since Rory and Kate put so much time and effort into the meal, I think Skip and I could be convinced to do our part and wash the dishes."
"We could?"
Skip protested.
"It's the least we can do,"
Clay returned flatly, frowning at his younger brother. Rory was all too aware of Clay's ploy. He wanted to get into the kitchen so they could find something else to eat without being conspicuous about it. Something plain and basic, no doubt, like roast beef sandwiches.
"Listen, you guys," Rory said brightly. "I'm sorry about dinner. I can see everyone's still hungry. You're all going out of your way to reassure me, but it isn't necessary."
"I don't know what you're talking about, Rory. Dinner was excellent," Clay said, patting his stomach.
Rory nearly laughed out loud.
"Why don't we call for a pizza?" she said, pleased with her solution. "I bungled dinner, so that's the least I can do to make it up to you."
Three faces stared at her blankly.
"Rory," Clay said gently, "the closest pizza parlor is 30 miles from here."
"Oh."
Undeterred, Skip leaped to his feet.
"No problem. You phone in the order, and I'll go get it."
Empty pizza boxes littered the living room floor, along with several abandoned soft drink cans. Skip lay on his back, staring up at the ceiling.
"Anyone for a little music?" he asked lazily.
"Sure."
Kate got to her feet and sat down at the piano. As her nimble fingers ran over the keyboard, the rich sounds echoed against the walls.
Some Lee Greenwood?
All right, Skip called out with a yell, punching his fist into the air. He thrust two fingers in his mouth and gave a shrill whistle.
Who? Rory asked, once the commotion had died down.
He's a country singer, Clay explained.
Blue ambled to his side, settling down at his feet. Clay gently stroked his back.
I guess I haven't heard of him, Rory murmured.
Once more, she discovered three pairs of eyes studying her curiously.
What about Johnny Cash? Kate suggested next. You probably know who he is.
Oh, sure.
Rory looped her arms over her bent knees and lowered her voice to a gravelly pitch.
I hear that train a-comin'.
Skip let loose with another whistle, and Rory laughed at his boisterous antics. Clay left the room. He returned a moment later with a guitar, then seated himself on the floor again beside Blue. Skip crawled across the braided rug in the center of the room and retrieved a harmonica from the mantel. Soon, Kate and the two men were making their own brand of music, country songs, from the traditional to the more recent. Rory didn't know a single one, but she clapped her hands and tapped her foot to the lively beat.
Sing for Rory, Skip shouted to Clay and Kate. Let's show her what she's been missing.
Clay's rich baritone joined Kate's lilting soprano, and Rory's hands and feet stopped moving. Her eyes darted from one to the other in open-mouthed wonder at the beautiful harmony of their two voices, male and female. It was as though they'd been singing together all their lives. She realized they probably had. When they finished, Rory blinked back tears, too dumbfounded for a moment to speak.
That was wonderful, she told them, and her voice caught with emotion.
Kate and Clay sing duets at church all the time, Skip explained. They're good, aren't they?
Rory nodded, gazing at the two of them. Clay and Kate were right for each other. They belonged together. And once she was gone, they would blend their lives as beautifully as they had their voices. Rory happened to catch Kate's eye. The other woman slipped her arms around Clay's waist and rested her head against his shoulder, laying claim to this man and silently letting Rory know it. Rory couldn't blame Kate. In like circumstances, she would have done the same.
Do you sing, Rory?
Kate asked, leaving Clay and sliding onto the piano bench.
A little, and I play some piano.
Actually, her own singing voice wasn't half bad. She'd participated in several singing groups while she was in high school and had taken 5 years of piano lessons.
Please sing something for us.
Rory recognized a hint of challenge in the words.
Okay.
She replaced Kate at the piano seat and started out with a little satirical ditty she remembered from her college days. Skip hooted as she knew he would at the clever words, and all three rewarded her with a round of applause.
Play some more, Kate encouraged. It's nice to have someone else do the playing for a change.
She sat next to Clay on the floor, once again resting her head against his shoulder. If it hadn't been for the guitar in his hands, Rory knew he would have placed his arm around her and drawn her even closer. It would have been the natural thing to do.
I don't know the songs you usually sing, though.
Rory was more than a little reluctant now. She'd never heard of this Greenwood person they seemed to like so well.
Play what you know, Kate said, and we'll join in.
After a few seconds' thought, Rory nodded.
This is a song by Billy Joel.
I'm sure you've heard of him. His songs are more rock than country, but I think you'll recognize the music. Rory was only a few measures into the ballad before she realized that Kate, Clay, and Skip had never heard this song. She stopped playing.
What about Whitney Houston?
Skip repeated the name a couple of times before his eyes lit up with recognition.
Hasn't she done Coke commercials?
Right, Rory said, laughing.
She's had several big hits.
Kate slowly shook her head.
Sorry, I don't think I can remember the words to her songs.
Barbara Streisand? I thought she was an actress.
Skip said with a puzzled frown. You mean she sings, too?
Reluctantly, Rory rose from the piano seat. Kate, you'll have to take over. It seems you three are a whole lot country, and I'm a little bit rock and roll.
We'll make you into a country girl yet, Skip insisted,
sliding the harmonica across his mouth with an ease Rory envied.
Clay glanced at his watch. We aren't going to be able to convert Rory within the next 12 hours.
A gloom settled over them as Kate took Rory's place at the piano.
Are you sure we can't talk you into staying a few extra days? Skip asked. We're just getting to know each other.
Rory shook her head, more determined than ever to leave as soon as she could.
It would be a shame for you to miss the county fair next weekend. Maybe you could stop here on your way back through Oregon after your trip to Canada, Kate added. Clay and I are singing, and we're scheduled for the square dance competition, too.
Yeah, Skip cried, and we've got pig races planned again this year.
Pig races? Rory echoed faintly.
I know it sounds silly, but it's really fun. We take the 10 fastest pigs in the area and let them race toward a bowl of Oreos. No joke, cookies. Everyone bets on who'll win, and we all have a lot of fun.
Skip's eyes shone with eagerness.
Please think about it anyway, Rory.
Mary's entering her apple pie again, Clay put in. She's been after that blue ribbon for 6 years.
100 reasons to fade out of their lives flew across Rory's mind like particles of dust in the wind. And yet, the offer was tempting. She tried unsuccessfully to read Clay's eyes, her own filled with a silent appeal. This was a decision she needed help making, but Clay wasn't helping. The thought of never seeing him again was like pouring salt onto an open wound. Still, it was a reality she'd have to face sooner or later. So Rory volunteered the only excuse she could come up with at the moment.
I don't have the time. I'm sorry, but I'd be cutting it too close to get back to San Francisco for work Monday morning. Not if you canceled part of your trip to Canada and came back on Friday, Skip pointed out. You didn't think you'd have a good time at the square dance either, but you did, remember?
It wasn't a matter of having a good time. So much more was involved, though the pig races actually sounded like fun. The very idea of such an activity would have astounded her only a week before, Rory reflected. She could just imagine what Dan would say.
Rory? Skip pressed. What do you think?
I don't know.
The county fair is about as good as it gets around Nightingale.
I don't want to impose on your hospitality again. Clay still wasn't giving her any help with this decision.
But having you stay with us isn't a problem, Skip insisted. As long as you promise to stay out of the kitchen, you're welcome to stick around all summer. Isn't that right, Clay?
His hesitation was so slight that Rory doubted anyone else had noticed it.
Naturally, Rory's welcome to visit us anytime she wants.
If staying with these two drives you crazy, Kate inserted, you could stay at my house. In fact, I'd love it if you did.
Rory dropped her gaze, fearing what she might see in Clay's eyes. She sensed his indecision as she struggled with her own. She had to leave, yet she wanted to stay.
I think I should take the rest of my vacation in Victoria, she finally told them. I know you're worried about getting back in time for work, but Skip's right. If you left Victoria one day early, then you could be here for the fair, Kate suggested again. But her offer didn't sound as sincere as it had earlier.
Rory said she doesn't have the time, Clay said after an awkward silence. I think we should respect her decision.
You sound as if you don't want her to come back, Skip accused.
No, Clay murmured, his eyes meeting hers. I want her here, but Rory should try to salvage some of the vacations she planned. She has to do what she thinks best.
Rory could feel his eyes moving over her hair and her face in loving appraisal. She tensed and prayed that Kate and Skip weren't aware of it.
During the next hour, Skip tried repeatedly to convince Rory to visit on her way back, or even to stay until the fair. As far as Skip could see, there wasn't much reason to go to Canada now anyway. But Rory resisted. Walking away from Clay once was going to be painful enough. Rory didn't know if she could do it twice. Skip was yawning by the time they decided to call an end to the evening. With little more than a mumbled goodnight, he hurried up the stairs, abandoning the others. Rory and Kate took a few extra minutes to straighten the living room, while Clay drove his pickup around to the front of the house. "I'd better burn the evidence before Mary sees these pizza boxes," Rory joked. "She'll have my hide once she hears about dinner." Kate laughed good-naturedly as she collected her belongings. When they heard Clay's truck, she put down her bags and ran to Rory. "You'll call me before you leave tomorrow?" Rory nodded and hugged her back. "If something happens and you change your mind about the fair, please know that you're welcome to stay with me and Dad. We'd enjoy the company." "Thank you, Kate." The house felt empty and silent once Kate had left with Clay. Rory knew it would be useless to go upstairs and try to sleep. Instead, she went out to the front porch, where she'd sat in the swing with Clay that first night. She sank down on the steps, one arm wrapped around a post, and gazed upward. The skies were glittered with the light of countless stars, stars that shone with a clarity and brightness one couldn't see in the city. Clay belonged to this land, this farm, this small town. Rory was a city girl to the marrow of her bones. This evening had proved the hopelessness of any dream that she and Clay might have of finding happiness together. There was his commitment to Kate, and there was the fact that he and Rory were too different, their tastes too dissimilar. She certainly couldn't picture him making a life away from Elk Run. Clay had accepted the hopelessness of it, too. That was the reason he agreed she should travel to Canada. This evening, Rory had sensed a desperation in him that rivaled her own. It was a night filled with insights. Sitting under the heavens, she was beginning to understand some important things about life. For perhaps the first time, she'd fallen in love. During the past 6 days, she'd tried to deny what she was feeling, but on the eve of her departure, it seemed silly to lie to herself any longer. Rory couldn't believe something like this had actually happened to her. Meeting someone and falling in love with him in the space of a few days was an experience reserved for novels and movies. This wasn't like her normal, sane, sensible self at all. Rory had always thought she was too level-headed to fall so easily in love, until she met Clay Franklin. On the wings of one soul-searching realization came another. Love wasn't what she'd expected. She'd assumed it meant a strong, sensual passion that overwhelmed the lovers and left them powerless before it. But in the past few days, she'd learned that love marked the soul as well as the body. Clay would forever be a part of her. Since that first night when Night Song was born, her heart had never felt more alive. Yet within a few hours, she would walk away from the man she loved and consider herself blessed to have shared these days with him. A tear rolled down the side of her face, surprising her. This wasn't a time for sadness, but joy. She'd discovered a deep inner strength she hadn't known she possessed. She wiped the moisture away and rested her head against the post, her eyes fixed on the heavens. The footsteps behind Rory didn't startle her. She'd known Clay would come to her this one last time. 11. Clay draped his arm over Rory's shoulders and joined her in gazing up at the sky. Neither spoke for several minutes, as though they feared words would destroy the tranquil mood. Rory stared, transfixed by the glittering display. Like her love for this man,
The stars would remain forever distant, unattainable, but certain and unchanging. A ragged sigh escaped her lips. All my life I've believed that everything that befalls us has a purpose. I've always thought that too, Clay whispered. Everything in life is deliberate.
Our final hours together, you're going to become philosophical.
He rested his chin on her head, gently ruffling her hair.
Are you sad, Rory?
Oh, no, she denied quickly. I can't be. I feel strange, but I don't know if I can find the words to explain it. I'm leaving tomorrow, and I realize we'll probably never see each other again. I have no regrets, not a single one. And yet, I think my heart is breaking. His hand tightened on her shoulder in silent protest, as if he found the idea of relinquishing her more than he could bear. We can't defy reality, she told him. Nothing's going to change in the next few hours. The water pump on the car will be replaced, and I'll go back to my life, the way you'll go back to yours.
I have this gut feeling there's going to be a hole the size of the Grand Canyon in mine the minute you drive away.
He dropped his arm and moved away from her. His eyes held a weary sadness, but Rory found an acceptance there, too.
I'm an uncomplicated man, he said evenly. I'm probably nothing like the sophisticated man you're dating in San Francisco.
Her thoughts flew to Dan, so cosmopolitan and superficial, and she recognized the truth in Clay's words. The two men were poles apart. Dan's interests revolved around his career and his car, but he was genuinely kind, and it was that quality that had attracted Rory.
Elk Run's given me a good deal of satisfaction over the years. My life's work is here, and God willing, someday my son will carry on the breeding programs I've started. Everything I've ever dreamed of has always been within my grasp.
He paused, holding in a long sigh and releasing it slowly.
And then you came, he whispered,
and a brief smile crossed his lips.
And within a matter of days, I'm reeling from the effects. Suddenly I'm left doubting what's really important in my life.
Rory lowered her eyes. Who'd have believed a silly water pump would be responsible for all this wretched soul-searching?
I've always been the type of man who's known what he wants, but you make me feel like a schoolboy no older than Skip. I don't know what to do anymore, Rory. In a few hours, you'll be leaving, and part of me says if you do, I'll regret it the rest of my life.
I can't stay. Their little dinner party had shown her how different their worlds actually were. She wouldn't fit into his life, and he'd be an alien in hers. But Kate belonged to his world. Clay rubbed his hands across his eyes and harshly drew in a breath.
I know you feel you should leave, but that doesn't mean I have to like it.
The pull to stay is there for me, too, she whispered.
And it's tearing both of us apart.
Rory shook her head. Don't you see? So much good has come out of meeting you, Clay. Her voice was strong. She had to make him understand that she'd always be grateful for the things he'd taught her. In some ways, I grew up tonight. I feel I'm doing what's right for both of us, although it's more painful than anything I've ever known. He looked at her with such undisguised love that she ached.
Let me hold you once more, he said softly. Give me that at least.
Rory shook her head. I can't. I'm sorry, Clay, but this is how it has to be with us. I'm so weak where you're concerned. I couldn't bear to let you touch me now and then leave tomorrow. His eyes drifted shut as he yielded to her wisdom.
I don't know that I could either.
They were only a few feet apart, but it seemed vast worlds stood between them.
More than anything, I want you to remember me fondly. Without any bitterness, Rory told him, discovering as she spoke the words how much she meant them.
Clay nodded. Be happy, Rory, for my sake.
Rory realized that contentment would be a long time coming without this man in her life, but she would find it eventually. She prayed that he'd marry Kate the way he'd planned. The other woman was the perfect wife for him, unlike herself. A thread of agony twisted around Rory's heart. She turned to leave him, afraid she'd dissolve into tears if she remained much longer.
Goodbye, Clay.
Goodbye, Rory.
She rushed past him and hurried up the stairs. The following morning, both Clay and Skip had left the house by the time Rory entered the kitchen.
Good morning, Mary, she said, with a note of false cheer in her voice. How did the visit with your sister go?
Fine.
Rory stepped around the housekeeper to reach the coffee pot and poured herself a cup. A plume of steam rose enticingly to her nostrils, and she took a tentative sip.
I found those pizza boxes you were trying so hard to hide from me, Mary grumbled as she wiped her hands on her apron. You fed these good men restaurant pizza?
Unable to stop herself, Rory chuckled at the housekeeper's indignation. Guilty as charged. Mary, you should have known better than to leave their fate in my evil hands.
Near as I can figure, the closest pizza parlor is a half hour away. Did you drive over and get it yourself, or did you send Skip?
Actually, he volunteered, she admitted reluctantly. Dinner didn't exactly turn out the way I'd hoped.
The housekeeper snickered.
I should have guessed. You city slickers don't know nothing about serving up a decent meal to your menfolk.
Rory gave a hefty sigh of agreement.
The only thing for me to do is stay on another couple of months and have you teach me.
As she expected, the housekeeper opened her mouth to protest.
Unfortunately, Rory continued, cutting Mary off before she could launch into her arguments, I'm hoping to be gone by this afternoon.
Mary's response was a surprise. The older woman's expression grew troubled and intense.
I suspected you'd be going soon enough, she said in a tight voice, pulling out a chair.
She sat down heavily and brushed wisps of gray hair from her forehead. Her weathered face was thoughtful.
It's for the best, you know. I knew you'd be glad to get rid of me.
Mary shrugged.
It's other reasons that make it right for you to leave. You know what I'm talking about, even if you don't want to admit it to me. As a person, you tend to grow on folks. Like I said before, for a city girl, you ain't half bad.
Rory took a banana from the fruit bowl in the center of the table.
For a stud farm stuck out here in the middle of nowhere, this place isn't half bad either, she said,
trying to lighten the mood, which had taken an unexpected turn toward the serious.
The people are friendly, and the apple pie's been exceptional.
Mary ignored the compliment on her pie.
By people, I suppose you're referring to Clay. You're going to miss him, aren't you, girl?
The banana found its way back into the bowl, and with it went her cheerful facade.
Yes, I'll miss Clay.
The older woman's frown deepened.
From the things I've been noticing, he's going to be yearning for you as well. But it's for the best, she said again. For the best.
Rory nodded, and her voice wavered.
Yes, but it isn't easy.
The housekeeper gave her a lopsided smile as she gently patted Rory's hand.
I know that too, but you're doing the right thing. You'll forget him soon enough.
A strong protest rose in her breast, closing off her throat. She wouldn't forget Clay, ever. How could she forget the man who had so unselfishly taught her such valuable lessons about life and love? Lessons about herself.
Kate Logan's the right woman for Clay, Mary said abruptly. Those few words cut Rory to the quick. Hearing another person voice the truth made it almost unbearably painful. I hope they're very happy. Kate loves him. She has from the time she was knee-high to a June bug. And there's something you don't know. Years back, when Clay was in college, he fell in love with a girl from Seattle. She'd been born and raised in the city. Clay loved her, wanted to marry her. He even brought her to Elk Run to meet the family. She stayed a couple of days, and the whole time she was as restless as water on a hot skillet. Apparently, she had words with Clay because the next thing I knew, she'd packed her bags and headed home. Clay never said much about her after that, but she hurt him bad. It wasn't until Kate got home from college that Clay thought seriously about marriage again. Mary's story explained a lot about Clay. Now I know I'm just an old woman who lacks her soaps and Saturday night bingo. Most folks don't think I've got a lick of sense, and that's all right. What others choose to assume don't bother me much. She paused and shook her head. But Kate Logan's about the kindest, dearest person this town has ever seen. People like her, they can't help themselves. She's always got a kind word, and there's no one in this world she's too good for. She cares about the people in this community. Those kids she teaches over at the grade school love her like nothing you've ever seen, and she loves them. When it came to building that fancy library, it was Kate who worked so hard convincing folks they'd be doing what was best for Nightingale by voting for that bond issue.
Rory kept her face averted. She didn't need Mary to tell her Kate was a good person. She'd seen the evidence of it herself.
What most folks don't know is that Kate's seen plenty of pain in her own life. She watched her mother die a slow death from cancer. Took care of her most of the time herself, nursing Nora when she should have been off at college having fun like other 19-year-olds. Her family needed her, and she was there. Kate gave old man Logan a reason to go on living when Nora passed away. She still lives with him, and it's long past time for her to be a carefree adult on her own. Kate's a good person clean through. Mary hesitated, then drew in a solemn breath. Now, you may think I'm nothing but a meddling old fool, but I'm saying it's a good thing you're leaving Elk Run before you break that girl's heart. She's got a chance now for some happiness, and God knows she deserves it. If she loses Clay, I can tell you it'd break her heart. She's too good to have that happen to her over some fancy city girl who's only passing through.
Rory winced at the way Mary described her.
I'm a plain talker, Mary said on the end of an abrupt laugh. Always have been, always will be. Knowing Clay, and I do, as well as his mother did, God rest her soul, he'll pine for you a while, but eventually everything will fall back into place. The way it was before you arrived.
Tears stung Rory's eyes. She felt miserable as it was, and Mary wasn't helping. She'd already assured the housekeeper she was leaving, but Mary apparently wanted to be damn sure she didn't change her mind. The woman didn't understand. But then again, maybe she did. Have you ever been in love, Mary?
Once, came the curt reply. Hurt so much the first time, I never chanced it again.
Are you sorry you lived your life alone now? That was what Rory saw for herself.
Oh, she knew she was being melodramatic and over-emotional, but she couldn't imagine loving any man as much as she did Clay. Mary lifted one shoulder in a shrug. Some days I have plenty of regrets, but then on others it ain't so bad. I'd like to have had a child, but God saw to it that I was around when Clay and Skip needed someone. That made up for what I missed.
They consider you family.
Yep, I suppose they do.
Mary pushed out her chair and stood up.
Well, I better get back to work. Those men expect a decent lunch. I imagine they're near starved after the dinner you fed them last night.
Despite her heartache, Rory smiled and finished her coffee. And I'd better get upstairs and pack the rest of my things. The mechanic said my car would be ready around noon. On her way to the bedroom, Rory paused at the framed photograph of Clay's parents that sat on the piano. She'd passed it a number of times and had given it little more than a fleeting glance. Now it suddenly demanded her attention, and she stopped in front of it. A tremor went through her hand as she lightly ran her finger along the brass frame. Clay's mother smiled serenely into the camera, her gray eyes so like her son's that Rory felt a knot in her stomach. Those same eyes seemed to reach across eternity and call out to Rory, plead with her. Rory's own eyes narrowed, certain her imagination was playing havoc with her troubled mind. She focused her attention on the woman's hair. That, too, was the same dark shade as Clay's, brushed away from her face in a carefully styled chignon. Clay had never mentioned his parents to her, not once. But studying the photograph, Rory knew intuitively that he'd shared a close relationship with his mother. Blue wandered out from the kitchen and stood at Rory's side as though offering consolation. Grateful, she bent down to pet him. Looking back at the photograph, Rory noted that Skip resembled his father, with the same dancing blue eyes that revealed more than a hint of devilry. Rory continued to study both parents, but it was Clay's mother who captured her attention over and over again. The phone ringing in the distance startled her, and her wrist was shaking when she set the picture back on the piano.
"Phone's for you,"
Mary shouted from the kitchen. Rory assumed it was George at the repair shop in Riversdale. She'd been waiting all morning to hear from him. "Hello," she said, her fingers closing tightly around the receiver. Her biggest fear was that something had happened to delay her departure a second time.
"Miss Campbell," said the mechanic, "everything's fine. I got that part in and working for you without a hitch."
"Thank God," she murmured. Her hold on the telephone receiver relaxed a little.
"I've got a man I could spare if you'd like to have your car delivered to Elk Run. But you've got to understand 50 miles is a fair distance, and I'm afraid I'll have to charge you extra for it."
"That's fine," Rory said eagerly, not even bothering to ask the amount. "How soon can he be here?" 12.
"So you're really going," Skip said as he picked up Rory's bags. "Somehow I figured I might have talked you into staying on for the county fair. You seem intent on bringing me to ruin, Skip Franklin. I'm afraid I'd bet all my hard-earned cash on those pig races you were telling me about," Rory teased.
Standing in the middle of the master bedroom, she surveyed it to be sure she hadn't forgotten anything. A pang of wistfulness settled over her as she slowly looked around. Not for the first time, Rory felt the love and warmth emanating from these brightly papered walls. Lazily, almost lovingly, she ran her fingertips along the top of the dresser, letting her hand linger there a moment, unwilling to pull herself away. This bedroom represented so much of what she was leaving behind. It was difficult to walk away. Skip stood in the doorway, impatiently waiting for her.
"Kate phoned and said she's coming over. She wants to say goodbye. I'll be happy to see her one last time."
Rory wished Skip would leave so she could delay her parting with this room a little longer. Until now, Rory hadn't realized how much sleeping in Clay's parents' room had meant to her. Her appreciation had come too late.
"Mary's packing a lunch for you," Skip announced with a wry chuckle. "And knowing Mary, it'll be enough to last you a week."
Rory smiled and reluctantly followed him down the stairs. As Skip had claimed, the housekeeper had prepared two large bags, which sat waiting on the kitchen table.
"Might as well take those with you, too," Mary muttered gruffly. I hate the thought of you eating restaurant food. This, at least, will stick to your ribs.
Goodbye, Mary, Rory said softly, touched by the housekeeper's thoughtfulness. On impulse, she hugged the older woman.
Thank you for everything, including our talk this morning. The impromptu embrace surprised Rory as much as it obviously did Mary.
You drive careful now, you hear?
The housekeeper responded, squeezing Rory tightly and patting her back several times.
I will, I promise.
A letter now and again wouldn't be amiss.
All right, Rory agreed, and used her sleeve to blot tears from the corners of her eyes. These people had touched her in so many ways. Leaving them was even more difficult than she'd imagined.
The housekeeper rubbed the heel of her hand over her right eye. Time for you to get on the road. What are you doing standing in the kitchen chit-chatting with me? She asked brusquely.
I'm going. Mary's gruff voice didn't fool Rory. The housekeeper's exterior might be a little crusty and her tongue a bit surly, but she didn't succeed in disguising a generous, loving heart.
I don't know where Clay is, Skip complained after he'd loaded the luggage into the MG's trunk. I thought he'd want to see you before he left. I wonder where he got off to.
I'm sure he's got better things to do than say goodbye to me.
No way, Skip said, frowning. I'm going to see if I can find him.
Rory's first reaction was to stop Skip. Then she quickly decided against it. If she made too much of a fuss, Skip might suspect something. She understood what had prompted Clay to stay away from the house all morning, and in truth, she was grateful. Leaving Elk Run was hard enough without prolonging the agony and lengthy farewells. Skip hesitated, kicking at the dirt with the pointed toe of his cowboy boot.
You two didn't have a fight or anything, did you?
No. What makes you ask? Skip shrugged.
Well, it's just that every time I walked into a room with the two of you, I could feel something. If it wasn't for Kate, I'd think my big brother was interested in you.
I'm sure you're imagining things.
I suppose so,
Skip said with a nod, dismissing the notion.
Ever since you got here, though, Clay's been acting weird.
How do you mean?
Sort of cranky.
My unexpected arrival added to his problems, don't you think? In so many ways, it was the truth, and she felt guilty about that. The responsibilities for the farm and for raising Skip were sobering enough. He didn't need her there to wreak havoc with his personal life.
You weren't any problem, Skip answered sharply. In fact, having you around was fun. The only trouble is you didn't stay long enough.
Thank you, Skip.
Once again, she felt her throat clog with tears. She was touched by his sweet, simple hospitality and reminded of how much she'd miss him.
I still kind of wish you were going to stay for the fair, he mumbled. You'd have a good time, I guarantee it. We may not have all the fancy entertainment you do in San Francisco, but when we do a county fair, we do it big.
I'm sure it'll be great fun.
Skip braced his foot against the bumper of the faded blue pickup, apparently forgetting his earlier decision to seek out Clay, which was just as well.
You don't like the country much, do you, Rory?
Oh, but I do, she said.
It's a different way of life, though. Here on Elk Run, I feel like a duck in a pond full of swans.
Skip laughed.
I suppose folks there in the big city don't think much of the country.
No one has time to think, Rory said with a small laugh.
That doesn't make any sense. Everyone's got thoughts.
Rory nodded, not knowing how to explain something so complex. When Skip had spent some time in the city, he'd figure out what she meant.
The one thing I've noticed more than anything is how quiet it is here, she said pensively, looking around, burning into her memory each detail of the farmhouse and the yard.
I like the quiet. Some places the noise is so bad I worry about ear damage, Skip said.
I imagine if I lived here, I'd grow accustomed to the silence, too. But to be honest,
I hadn't realized how much I enjoy the sounds of the city. There's something invigorating about the clang of the trolley cars or the foghorn on the bay early in the morning. Skip frowned and shook his head. You honestly like all that racket? Rory nodded. It's more than that. The city's exciting. I hadn't really known how much living there meant to me before coming to Elk Run. Rory wasn't sure how to describe the aroma of freshly baked sourdough bread or the perfumed scent of budding rose bushes in Golden Gate Park to someone who'd never experienced them. Country life had its appeal, she couldn't deny that, but she belonged to the city. At least that was what she told herself over and over again. Ah, Skip said, and his foot dropped from the bumper with a thud. Here's Clay now. Rory tensed, clasping her hands in front of her. Clay's lengthy strides quickly diminished the distance between the barn and the yard. Each stride was filled with purpose, as though he longed to get this polite farewell over with. Rory straightened and walked toward him. I'll be leaving in a couple of minutes, she said softly. Kate's coming to say goodbye, Skip added. Rory noted how Clay's eyes didn't quite meet her own. He seemed to focus instead on the car behind her. They'd already said everything there was to say, and this final parting only compounded the pain. Saying thank you seems so inadequate, Rory told him in a voice that wasn't entirely steady. I've appreciated your hospitality more than you'll ever know. Hesitantly, she held out her hand to him. Clay's hard fingers curled around her own, his touch light and impersonal. Rory swallowed hard, unable to hold back the emotion churning so violently inside her. His expression was completely impassive, but she sensed that he held on to his self-control with the thinnest of threads. In that moment, Rory felt the longing in him and knew that he recognized it in her, too. Oh, Clay, she whispered, her eyes brimming with tears. The impulse to move into his arms was like a huge wave threatening to sweep over her, and she didn't know how much longer she'd have the strength to resist. Don't look at me like that, Clay muttered grimly. I can't help it. But he belonged to Kate, and nothing was likely to change that. He took a step toward her and stopped himself, suddenly remembering they weren't alone. Skip, go hold Thunder for Don. Don's trying to pasteworm him, and he's getting dragged all over the stall. Clay's words were low-pitched, sharp, full of demand. But Clay, Rory's about to do it. Mumbling something unintelligible, Skip trudged off to the barn. The minute his brother was out of sight, Clay caught Rory's shoulders, his fingers rough and urgent through the thin cotton of her blouse. The next instant, she was locked against him. The kiss was inevitable, Rory knew, but when his mouth settled over hers, she wanted to weep for the joy she found in his arms. He kissed her temple, her cheek, her mouth, until she clung to him with hungry abandon. They were standing in the middle of the yard in full view of farmhands, but Clay didn't seem to care, and Rory wasn't about to object. I told myself I wouldn't do this, he whispered huskily. Rory's heart constricted. At the sound of a car in the distance, Clay abruptly dropped his arms, freeing her. His fingers tangled in her hair as if he had to touch her one last time. I was a fool to think I could politely shake your hand and let you leave. We're more than casual friends, and I can't pretend otherwise. To hell with the consequences. Tears flooded Rory's eyes as she stared up at Clay. Then, from behind him, she saw the cloud of dust that announced Kate's arrival. She inhaled a deep breath in an effort to compose herself, and, wiping her damp cheeks with the back of one hand, forced a smile. Clay released a ragged sigh as he trailed a calloused hand down the side of her face. Goodbye, Rory, he whispered. With that,
He turned and walked away. Thick fog swirled around Rory as she paused to catch her breath on the path in Golden Gate Park. She bent forward and planted her hands on her knees, driving the oxygen into her heaving lungs. Not once in the 2 weeks she'd been on vacation had she followed her jogging routine, and now she was paying the penalty. The muscles in her calves and thighs protested the strenuous exercise, and her heart seemed about to explode. Her biggest problem was trying to keep up with Dan, who'd run ahead, unwilling to slow his pace to match hers. "Rory?
Over here." Her voice was barely more than a choked whisper.
She meant to raise her hand and signal to him, but even that required more effort than she could manage. Seeing a bench in the distance, she stumbled over and collapsed onto it. Leaning back, she stretched out her legs.
"You are out of shape," Dan teased, handing her a small towel.
Rory wiped the perspiration from her face and smiled her appreciation. "I can't believe 2 weeks would make such a difference." She'd been back in San Francisco only a couple of days. Other than dropping off the MG at Dan's place, this was the first time they'd had a chance to get together. Dan stood next to her, hardly out of breath, even after a 3-mile workout.
2 weeks is a long time, he said with the hint of a smile. I suppose you didn't keep up with your vitamin program either, he chastised gently. Well, Rory, it's obvious how much you need me.
She chose to ignore that comment. I used to consider myself in top physical condition. Not anymore. Good grief, I thought my heart was going to give out 2 miles back. Dan, blonde and debonair, was appealingly handsome in a clean-cut, boyish way. He draped the towel around his neck and grasped the ends. Rory's eyes were drawn to his hands, with their finely manicured nails and long, tapered fingers. Stockbroker fingers, nice hands, friendly hands. Still, Rory couldn't help comparing them with another pair of male hands, darkly tanned from hours in the sun and roughly calloused. Gentle hands, working hands.
I meant what I said about you needing me, Dan murmured, watching her closely. It's time we got serious, Rory. Time we made some important decisions about our future.
When she least expected it, he slid closer on the bench beside her. With his so smooth fingers, he cupped her face, his thumbs stroking her flushed cheeks.
I did a lot of thinking while you were away.
She covered his fingers with her own, praying for an easier way to say what she must. They'd been seeing each other for months, and she hated to hurt him, but it would be even crueler to lead him on. When they'd started dating, Dan had been looking for a casual relationship. He'd recently been divorced and wasn't ready for a new emotional commitment. Oh, Dan, I think I know what you're going to say. Please don't. He paused, searching her face intently.
What do you mean?
I did some thinking while I was away, too. And I realized that although I'll always treasure your friendship, we can't ever be more than friends. His dark eyes ignited with resistance.
What happened to you on this vacation, Rory? You left, and 2 weeks later you returned a completely different woman.
You're exaggerating, Rory objected weakly. She knew she was different, from the inside out.
You've hardly said a word to me about your trip, Dan complained, in a tone that suggested he felt hurt by her reticence. All you've said is that the car broke down in the Oregon outback and you were stuck on some farm for days until a part could be delivered. You don't blame me for that, do you? I had no idea there was anything wrong with the water pump.
She laughed at his description of Nightingale as the outback.
You completely missed the writers' conference, didn't you?
That couldn't be helped, but I enjoyed the rest of my vacation. Victoria was like stepping into a small piece of England, she said, in an effort to divert his attention from the time she'd spent on the Franklin farm. Victoria had been lovely, but unfortunately she hadn't been in the proper mood to appreciate its special beauty.
"You didn't so much as mail me a postcard."
"I know," she said, with a twinge of guilt.
"I was lonesome without you,"
Dan said slowly, running his hand over her hair.
"Nothing felt right with you gone."
Rory knew it had taken a lot for him to admit that, and it made what she had to tell him all the more difficult.
"Dan, please," she said, breaking away from him and standing.
I don't love you."
"But we're friends."
"Of course." He seemed both pleased and relieved by that.
"Good friends?" he coaxed.
Rory nodded, wondering where this was leading.
"Then there's really no problem, is there?"
he asked, his voice gaining enthusiasm.
"You went away, and I realized how much I love you, and you came back deciding you value my friendship. That at least is a beginning."
"Dan, honestly."
"Well, isn't it?"
"Our relationship isn't going anywhere," she told him, desperate to clarify the issue. Dan was a good person, and he deserved someone who was crazy in love with him, the way she was with Clay. To Rory's surprise, Dan drew her forward and kissed her. Startled, she stood placidly in his arms, feeling his warm mouth move over hers. She experienced no feeling, no excitement, nothing. Kissing Dan held all the appeal of drinking flat soda. Frustrated, he tried to deepen the kiss. Rory braced her hands against his chest and tried to pull herself free. He released her immediately, then stepped back, frowning.
"Okay, okay, we've got our work cut out for us, but the electricity will come in time."
Somehow, Rory doubted that. Dan dropped her off in front of her apartment.
"Can I see you soon?"
he asked, his hands clenching the steering wheel. He didn't look at her, but stared straight ahead as though he feared her answer. Rory hesitated.
"I'm not going to fall in love with you, Dan, and I don't want to take advantage of your feelings. I think it'd be best if you started seeing someone else."
He appeared to consider that for an awkward moment.
"But the decision should be mine, shouldn't it?"
"Yes, but..."
"Then leave everything to me and stop worrying. If I choose to waste my time on you, that's my problem, not yours. I think you're going to change your mind, Rory, because I love you enough for both of us."
"Oh, Dan." Her shoulders sagged with defeat. He hadn't believed a single word she'd said.
"Now don't look so depressed. How about a movie on Sunday? It's been a while since we've done that."
Exhausted, she shook her head.
"Dan, no."
"I insist, so stop arguing."
She didn't have the energy to argue.
"All right," she murmured.
He'd soon learn she meant what she'd said.
"All right."
"Good, I'll pick you up at 6.
Rory climbed out of the MG and closed the door, turning to give Dan a limp wave. She paused in the foyer of her apartment building to unlock her mailbox. There was a handful of envelopes. Absently, she shuffled through a leaflet from a prominent department store, an envelope with a Kentucky postmark, and an electric bill. It wasn't until she was inside her apartment that Rory noticed the letter postmarked Nightingale, Oregon.